Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. For more info, go to happyvalleyunited.com.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante, and I'm flying solo today. It's just me. I hope you could tolerate me for an hour on my own today. And fortunately, we've got lots to talk about, and we're going to be starting today in an unusual place. We're going to start out talking women's college basketball. I know. That's not what you tune in to hear. But Penn State is going through a coaching change with the women's basketball team. So I think it's worth a conversation, and it's worth figuring out some lessons that we could get from this hire, from this firing, and where you go from there if you're Penn State. So let's get into that. Coach Carolyn Keegar was let go by Penn State after a very unsuccessful season. But let's take a look at a few different things with Coach Keegs, as she was known around these parts. I got a chance to meet her on multiple occasions, to the point where I'd say we were friendly. Not friends, I don't know her that well, just met her a few times. But I enjoyed her company. I liked her, okay? I liked her personality. I liked the energy. I liked the enthusiasm. I really liked that she had a philosophy for her team. She wanted to play an up-tempo brand of basketball. And it's not necessarily I liked it because, boy, that's the best way to win basketball games. But I liked that there was a philosophy to how she played the game. And we were able to talk about it. And she was able to articulate why this was the way she wanted to play the game. I felt that she was not just an advocate for this up-tempo play, but she could also talk to you about why that was the way she wanted to play and why that would work best for her team. Now, I met her at a couple NIL-type events where she and her players would be there, and they would mix with some Penn State donors and get to know them. They would present themselves in front of Penn State fans, obviously. And like I said, most of them donors to the program. And it gave you a chance to meet both the coach and the players away from the court, away from that, you know, post-game media, that type of thing where the conversation is just about a specific game itself or the game itself. Now, in those events, I was very impressed with Coach Keegar. One of the things that impressed me a lot was she talked about things with her team, with her players, beyond just what's going on the court itself. She talked about how each player needed to be able to sell themselves, to brand themselves, essentially say, this is who they are, this is where they want to be in life, where they wanted to get to. She then, Coach Keegar, presented herself in that way and then had her players do that, which was really very impressive because here you had some young players, some young people, even freshmen. They're 17, 18 years old, and they're talking off the cuff in front of people who were much older than them, and they had to present, and they presented themselves very, very well. I also got a chance to interview some of her players, and they all came across very, very well. The type of people that you, as a Penn State alum, would be very proud of. And again, that goes beyond what they do on the court and how they are as people. And I think that is still important at Penn State. Remember, success with honor. I still believe in that, and I think most Penn Staters do too. Now let's get back to Coach Keegar herself. She came in after a five-year stint coaching at Marquette. where her final three seasons there, she made NCAA appearances. She had a regular season conference championship. She had a conference tournament championship. She won a couple NCAA tournament games. I think that's a pretty good resume. And coming from a school like Marquette, that's a pretty good hire. You're not reaching down into, you know, Division II. You're having someone, bringing in someone with a winning record. A lot of good things that you could say about this hire when it happened. I'm not going to present myself as an expert in women's college basketball. I am not. I've watched some games. I don't watch a lot of them. But certainly based on the resume, and I'll also take it further, having met Carolyn Keegar, I think she presents herself really, really well. I could see how she could go through the interview process and really be an impressive candidate. So she now becomes Penn State coach. Things don't go very well. 7 years at the helm, 7 years at Penn State, 6 losing seasons out of 7 years at Penn State. That right there is an unacceptable record at a school like Penn State. And even with her one winning record, she was not able to make the NCAA tournament. And it just even went downhill from there. A lot of people thought a year ago that should have been enough for her, that she should have been let go. But she was given another year, and I'll tell you what, the results these last 2 years, it's been an embarrassing performance. Team over the last 2 seasons has a 5-31 record in Big Ten conference play. Totally unacceptable. Totally unacceptable. And a change needed to be made at that point. You can't finish in last place or next to last place in the Big Ten at Penn State and expect to keep your job. But what this does, and where I'm heading with all this, is how do we now look at coaches at the collegiate level? We've got to ask ourselves a question beyond the questions that we did previously. Yes, resources have always been an issue in any coaching position. Always been the case. But now, when you use the term resources, you're talking beyond facilities, those type of things. You're now talking about the resources to compensate the players. How does that work? Well, starting with the compensation that the universities themselves could spread throughout their collegiate athletes. We know that's approximately $20, $21 million that the university could pay across all of intercollegiate sports. And the vast majority of the money is going to go to football, okay? And I don't have an argument with that. Football is what brings in the revenue. So the money has to go there. Then, to compensate players beyond, you know, football, is how do you split up the rest of the money? And at Penn State, you have some pretty good programs with men's hockey, wrestling. We know those teams are very good. And Penn State has a lot of other sports teams that do very, very well. So now the question, though, is when you have a coach like Carolyn Keegar, who you're letting go of with women's basketball, and it's now time to hire again, it's not just a question of what coach are you bringing in. Obviously, that's really important. But the question becomes, what kind of coach can you bring in based on the resources that you're making available? Yes, meaning how much are you able to pay the players? And remember, besides the money coming directly from the university, you could add money on through NIL. It's a long, long discussion how NIL works, but that's the extra money oftentimes to differentiate. So I do not know, and I'm not going to profess to know, how much money has been put into the women's college basketball program to compensate players. I don't know that. I don't know how different it is at Penn State than it is elsewhere. But that's now part of the equation. Now, over the 7 years that Carolyn Keegar has coached Penn State women, it's not always been an NIL world. It didn't start out that way 7 years ago. So there was a lack of success to begin with, and it has continued through the NIL period. So now, any coach you bring in, first question is going to be, what are my resources? What's my payroll going to look like? Okay? So you got to add that part to the equation. For those of you who are baseball fans, just how much can you blame a Pittsburgh Pirate manager for the team's losing record when you know the ownership is not investing money into the program? So I'm not saying Penn State doesn't, because I don't know. I don't know how much money that they're putting into the women's program. What I do know, though, is when you go out and hire, that's going to be the first question. You got to be prepared to answer it. All we have to do is look back at Penn State football, James Franklin, going to Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech infamously was not investing money into their football program. They really wanted James Franklin to come in. There's only one way James Franklin would take that job, and that's if Virginia Tech would invest not only in James Franklin, but also in the money that they're going to put into the program, meaning how much money are they going to give him for payroll? How much money is he going to get to compensate players? How much are they going to improve the facilities also? All of those things become part of it. Now, we went through that whole exercise talking women's college basketball. And here's the next logical step. After football, men's basketball is the biggest revenue sport in college basketball. Penn State men's basketball, well, not having much more success, if any, than the women's team. When we come back after the break, we're now going to talk about Mike Rhodes, and we're taking all these questions that we asked on the women's basketball side, we're going to ask him about men's basketball. We're going to do that right after this break.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. For more info, go to happyvalleyunited.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante. This is quarter number two of our show. And yes, it is just me today. Hopefully you will be able to tolerate me for a whole hour of Penn State sports talk. In quarter number one, we talked about women's basketball coach, former Penn State women's basketball coach, Carolyn Keegar, let go. Just to summarize my thoughts on that, you can't have 7 years to you available to you and have one winning season in that seven and these last 2 years having won a total of five conference games while losing 31 conference games and expect to keep your job. Just not going to happen. So no matter what you think, if you like Carolyn Keegar, which I do, doesn't matter. You got to find a way to win some games. Okay, Let's switch now to the men's side of it. And it's Mike Rhodes coming off, just also no other way to put it, an awful season. He's now been the men's basketball coach for 3 seasons. Overall records of first year, he was 16-17, 16-15 his second year, 12-18 this past season overall. Conference record, first year he was 9-11, respectable in a very tough Big Ten, 6-14 his second year, and this past year, a god-awful 3-16 in conference. They now have the conference tournament. I say 3-16 that I'm recording this prior to the final regular season game against Rutgers, which means even with a win, that would only put them at 4 wins. Not good record. Not a good record at all. But let's go. Let's do the background check on Mike Rhodes. First of all, he comes from Mahanoy City, not far from my hometown. I got a chance to talk to Mike Rhodes, and I know this is going to sound similar to what I said about Coach Keegar. I met Mike Rhodes. I like Mike Rhodes. I think I had a similar was raised in a similar type town as him. We had, I think, similar backgrounds. In that way, when I spoke to him, seemed to hit it off partially because of that similar background. As far as his coaching career goes, he won everywhere he was. You can't ask for more from a guy than that. His history, he coached at Randolph-Macon, then made it to Rice. He coached there for 3 years, a tremendous turnaround there, losing records the first two. Ended up winning 23 games in his third year at Rice. Then went on to VCU, his most recent stop prior to coming to Penn State. He coached there for 6 years, had a tremendous record. Made the tournament 3 times at VCU. Hey, that is not a bad resume. And I think when you're looking for a head coach, no matter the sport, one of the things you're looking for is not just did he win somewhere else, but did he win in multiple places? When you have that conversation, we talk more about college football. And Kurt Cignetti is a guy that we talked about quite a bit, the coach at Indiana, very successful the last 2 years at Indiana. But what Cignetti had going for him is multiple coaching stops. He won everywhere he went. He's a winner. As he said, Google him. Look him up. Well, guess what? Prior to coming to Penn State, Google Mike Rhodes. He won. He won everywhere he was. So I'm going to go with, I think this was a good hire at the time. A Pennsylvania guy, fairly local to Penn State. This is a guy that you expected, if he were successful, that he would stick around for quite a while. And that obviously is the best case scenario for everybody. It obviously has not happened yet at Penn State. So the question is, and especially in light of letting go of the women's basketball coach, the immediate question was, what about men's basketball? This team was terrible this past year. Last place in the Big Ten. Something needs to be done. And the easiest thing to do is to fire the coach. I'm going to give a little bit of an alternative point of view on this. And not just because I like Mike Rhodes and he comes from my neck of the woods. There's more to it than that. First of all, this is not a Carolyn Keegar situation where he's been given 7 years. It's only been 3 years. And when he came to Penn State, it was after Mike Shrewsbury left, and Shrewsbury did not leave much behind. The team, the recruiting class, Mike Rhodes had to start all over again with transfers, and then again, year two, change over in the team. Now, there have been years where if a coach lost much of his team to the transfer portal, it was definitely a red mark on his record, on him. Why do they not want to play for this guy? Well, guess what, folks? We're in a different world around here. I talked about with Carolyn Keeger, if you're going to look to replace her, before you come up with names as a replacement, you got to decide how much you want to invest in that sport. Not just for the coach, but on player compensation. It's the same thing here with Penn State basketball. We've got to ask the question, how much are you willing to invest into the program? Are you, yes, football is king at Penn State, and that's where the majority of the money goes. We know that. But how important is basketball at Penn State? Does it matter to the fan base? Do they care? Hey, I've always felt if you could put a team on the court that could win games, the fans will show up. I really believe that they will. But what does it take to put a team together now? It's different than just a handful of years ago. Compensation has to be part of it. How much are you going to invest in that kind of, that compensation? And with Mike Rhodes now at the helm, there's some more questions that go into this. Again, it's only been 3 years. Is that enough? Is that enough time to give a coach to put together a team? Now, there's also more that goes on into this. Mike Rhodes was asked about his status as the coach at Penn State, and he said he doesn't plan on going anywhere. He expects to be around, and he pointed to the 4 years that are left on his contract. We all know how that can work out. But if you talk about buyout, the reports that I have say that right now, if they were to buy Mike Rhodes out, it would cost $9 million. Here's my question. That $9 million that you can give Mike Rhodes to not coach the team, maybe you should invest that $9 million with Mike Rhodes into more good players at Penn State. How about that? Wouldn't that seem like a better investment of that $9 million? There's another part to this, too. Look at this Penn State roster. There are eight freshmen, true freshmen, on this roster. And of that eight freshmen, six of them are in the rotation, which means they play, okay? Six freshmen. There's two sophomores on this roster. Guess what? They are also in the rotation. They play. It's a very young team. There's only one senior on the team. Now, again, in years past, that would have probably meant, gee, this is a young team that's going to grow up together. They're going to mature together over the next couple years. I know. It's a different world right now. So, and position. What do we do about Mike Rhodes? Well, I'd like to know, are these players going to come back? If they are, if Mike Rhodes sticks around and they stick around, don't you have to give him another year? Give him the opportunity to develop these young players? Now, if all of these players, or many of them, do that mass exodus where it's no matter who's here, Mike Rhodes or somebody else, they are starting over again. That's a different story. But as things currently stand, a young team, a coach who 3 years in, has four more years left on his contract. And by the way, the buyout is $9 million this year, $6 million after the season, then $3 million after the following season. So the buyout gets definitely better. But you have, if you're Pat Kraft, you got to face the question. If you decide to make the change, if you decide Mike Rhodes is not the right guy, you got to know if you want to bring in a good coach, first question he's going to ask is, Pat Kraft, what's my budget here? How much money am I going to be able to invest in this roster? That's going to be the biggest question. That's the biggest variable. And any coach worth anything, that's going to be his first question when you talk to him. How much is he going to be able to invest in the roster? And if the answer's not a good one, you're not going to get the coach. And to tie that back into what we talked about with James Franklin going to Virginia Tech had to have the right answer to that question. And they did. They have decided to invest a lot more money into that football program. Otherwise, you don't get James Franklin to coach there. It's going to be the same thing here. If you decide to change coaches now, you're not just deciding to change coaches. You've got to make the decision that you're going to invest into the men's basketball program. I don't know if they're prepared to do that. Right now, my feeling is your best bet, see if you could stick around with Mike Rhodes. Can you invest enough to keep this roster together? Let these young players develop. That's what I'm looking to see, hoping to see. All right, that's it for quarter number two. A lot more show to go. Stick with us.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team. Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United. The NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. For more info, go to happyvalleyunited.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante. This is quarter number three of our show. I am flying solo today. So in the first couple segments of our show, we talked about Penn State basketball. We touched on women's basketball in quarter number one. Then it was men's basketball in quarter number two. Just to wrap up, Coach Carolyn Keeger out as Penn State women's basketball coach after 7 years, one winning record, no NCAA tournament appearances, and just really, really bad finish in her last two seasons. The question then gets switched over to men's basketball. Mike Rhodes also struggled this past year. 3 years into his coaching tenure at Penn State, it's not gone well for him, but a very young team. I'm not sure now's the time to change horses at the head coach position. Very young team. Let's see if he can develop the team, not to mention 4 years left on his contract and a fairly high buyout if you wanted to make the change there. All right, let's shift gears, though, here. On Friday, we had something interesting in Washington, D.C. It was called the Saving College Football Sports Roundtable. And this was held at the White House with the president and a lot of different folks representing college sports. Interestingly enough, the one group that was not represented were players. Now, I am not sure, out of all the players throughout the country, I'm not sure who you would pick out to be a representative for them. But merely even for optics, how could you not get at least a couple student athletes there to be represented? The president said, well, we've got coaches here like Nick Saban and Urban Meyer. Well, their interest is even, they care more for the players than themselves. I found that to be an interesting quote. These two coaches, when you say they cared more for the players, I'm not sure when Urban Meyer was coaching Utah, Florida, then Ohio State, his concern was more the players than himself. and winning at football. And I'll say the same thing for Nick Saban. But let's let that pass. What we have here is the big question of, should the federal government get involved in college sports? My initial instinct to that is an emphatic no. We're just better off running things, no matter what the question is. More government is typically not the right answer to it. But I do want to point out one thing. This would not be the first time that a president has stepped in to college football to fix a problem. Yes, I'm going to go way back for this history lesson. Way back to the early 1900s when President Theodore Roosevelt stepped in. And why did he do that? Well, at the time, college football was turning into an absolutely brutal sport. Players were literally dying on the football field. Remember, back then, they were playing without helmets, no forward pass. It was a violent game. I believe I read they said in 1 year there were 18 players, I think, between high school and collegiate level. 18 players dying from injuries occurring on the football field. So Teddy Roosevelt got involved, and they changed many of the rules, including the forward pass became part of the equation, and they changed various other rules for safety's sake, and that actually saved college football at the time. There was one other little interesting tidbit from that I just found fascinating, which was this. Some schools, because football was getting just too violent, they replaced football with rugby. That's right. They changed it to rugby for safety's sake. That's very interesting. All right, let's get back to this meeting that they had last Friday called Saving College Sports Roundtable. First of all, you had no college athletes there. No student-athlete representation at the meeting, which I think was a big mistake. The next issue that I have with all of this, and I'm not sure that I do have a problem in this specific situation with the government getting involved. Typically, I would want the NCAA, the conferences, and so on, to clean their own house, fix the problems themselves. The problem is, who do you think involved in college football is the right person or group to fix college sports? Who do you think that is? Certainly no one from the NCAA itself. They've proved that they can't get anything right. They can't get out of their own way. And if you think much of the problem is NIL and the money that's gone into this, hey, the NCAA had an opportunity for years to cut short that problem and share some of the billions of dollars that they were raking in with the student athletes. They chose not to until the courts stepped in and forced them to do it. Now you've got the situation that you do now. So are you going to trust the NCAA? I'm not. Are you going to... The people with the power, the commissioners, they can't even agree among themselves. But you also have very, very different agendas between, say, the Southeast Conference and the Big Ten commissioners and the commissioners of the ACC, the Big 12, the Group of Six conferences. They all have different agendas, different incentives. So, let's put it that way. There is nobody within collegiate sports who could fix it, which actually leads to the next question. Well, so because of that, federal government intervention, I'm not necessarily as against it as I would be on the surface. But it leads to my next question. What exactly is the problem with college sports that they're going to fix? Now, that's not me saying that there aren't any problems. There are. But what I want to know, after reading the notes and the quotes from this meeting, I don't know about you, but in any business that I worked for, that I ran, didn't matter. If there was a problem, you define that problem first. You know what your problem is. You know what you're looking to fix before you fix it. If you don't know what that problem is, how do you fix it? Now, why do I put that out there? Well, think about some of these people who attended this meeting. And if you read some of the quotes from them, nothing is about defining what the problem is, why it's a problem, and why it needs to be, quote-unquote, fixed. Listen to some of these quotes that Nick Saban, now retired, having made millions and millions and millions of dollars as a coach at Alabama, and he's telling us essentially that there's got to be more of an emphasis on academics because that's the most important thing. I ask you, do you think that was Nick Saban's first initial emphasis as coach of Alabama? And his collegiate career, he was so concerned about these student athletes, so concerned. It was so much his number one priority that he went off to the NFL to make more money there if possible. Completely failed and made his way back to college football. With that said, this is not, hey, Nick Saban was a really good college football coach. We all know that. I can see that point. I'm just not sure this is the right guy to come in and tell us what is wrong. And if you look at his quotes, let me read some of it to you. I think we need to come up with a system, and we obviously have to do with the president's leadership and also Congress, probably whether it's antitrust legislation or whatever it is, to allow student athletes in all sports, including women's and Olympic sports, to enhance their quality of life while going to college. Coach Saban, that sounds fantastic. It sounds great. But what are you saying there? A lot of nice words, platitudes there. What problem is he fixing with that quote? Please tell me. Please share with me what it is he's fixing. Because I don't know. Don't know. There was also the representative from the United States Olympic Committee, a woman by the name of Sarah Hirschland. What is her incentive? Well, she's concerned about the gold medals. And she points out that the college sports system with the Olympic sports is the feeder system for the United States Olympic team. Well, she's scared that funding is going to be short-circuited to those Olympic sports, and it's not going to act as well as a feeder system for her Olympic team. Is that really, really what is wrong with college sports? That it's not doing a good enough job to feed the Olympic system? My point there is, and I don't blame her. I don't blame her for advocating for the success of the athletes that are in the Olympic sports. I don't blame her because that's her job. That's her job to do that. But is she the right person to decide what is wrong with collegiate sports and fix it? I don't think so. And I could go through with a lot of quotes from a lot of the different folks involved here, and I'm not seeing where any one of them has their agenda is what is the best thing for all of college sports. They each have their own individual agenda. So I'm not sure what was accomplished in these 2 hours. But guess what? the president's going to give us an executive order that's going to fix everything. We'll talk about that when we come back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. For more info, go to happyvalleyunited.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four of our show. I am Jim Galante, flying solo today. It's actually been going very fast. Lots to talk about. And when we left you after quarter number three, I was talking about the meeting that they had at the White House last Friday called Saving College Sports Roundtable. And I was getting myself a little worked up. You had a little bit of salty Jim going on there because it just seemed to me it's representing everything that is wrong with college sports. You had so many people there who we turn to for their guidance, that they know the sport, they understand the issues and the problems, when really what we got was each one of them having their own agenda, their own incentives, and that's what they were putting forward. That's it. That is how that worked. And in that 2 hours, I'm not sure anybody actually defined what the problems were. However, with all of that going on, we're not defining the problems. But here's the quote from the president. I will have an executive order within 1 week, and it will be very all-encompassing. And we're going to put it forward, and we're going to get sued, and we're going to see how it plays, okay? But I'll have an executive order which will solve every problem in this room, every conceivable problem, within 1 week, and we'll put it forward. We will get sued. That's the only thing I know for sure. Well, Mr. President, yes, I think you're right. Whatever solution you come up with, you will get sued because that's how college sports works right now. No matter what the rule, what the incentives, somebody's not going to like it, and they're going to run to the court system. And you know what? The court systems are about as biased as everybody who was sitting in that room. If you go to a court system in Mississippi determining the playing status of an Ole Miss player, it's probably going to come out in favor of the Ole Miss player. That's what we have seen from all of this. And I just want to hit on another player in all of this, not literally an athlete player, but someone who has a voice, is Texas Tech billionaire booster. By the name of Cody Campbell. Boy, wouldn't we all like to have that as our description, being a billionaire booster? But anyway, Cody Campbell contributes quite a bit to Texas Tech. And as we know, Texas Tech made the playoffs this past season, had a very successful year, mostly because folks like Cody Campbell gave a lot of money to Texas Tech's program. They brought in a lot of very expensive players, very good players, and they're a playoff team. So what is Cody Campbell's interest in all of this? Here's what it is. He doesn't like how the TV contracts are worked, which is essentially right now, we know, Big Ten, big contract mostly with Fox, where they make a lot of money. Southeast Conference with ESPN, they make a lot of money. Folks like the Big 12, where Texas Tech resides, and the ACC, they don't make nearly as much money as the Big Ten and the Southeast Conference. Their feeling is, They would like an NFL model type TV contract. Well, what's that? Well, individual teams don't negotiate their television deals, nor do conferences. You don't have AFC and NFC negotiating separately. It's all one big contract, and they're allowed to do that. And the feeling is by them having essentially that monopoly, they make the most money. Hey, and they're also involved with multiple networks and now streaming services. That brings the most money in. So you have teams like Green Bay making the same TV money as the New York teams or the LA teams. Well, that's the model he's looking for. He wants to get rid of this disparity between the Big Ten, the Southeast Conference, and the rest of the conferences. Gee, that's interesting. He's representing Texas Tech, who's not part of one of those big conferences. Well, guess what? Greg Sankey, commissioner of the Southeast Conference, Tony Petitti, commissioner of the Big Ten, what do you think they think of this idea? Can you believe this? They're not in favor of it. They like the system as it currently is, where their two conferences make most of the money, and they have a competitive advantage that way. So, is that the biggest problem? Is it that television money? Is it if they could distribute it more evenly, and at least according to Cody Bellinger, bring in more money in total and share it more equally among the schools, that all the other problems will be taken care of? That's Cody Bellinger's thought. Cody Bellinger, listen to me. Cody Campbell. I'm thinking baseball again with Cody Bellinger. But here you have this situation where, again, it's in everyone puts forth something that is in their best self-interest. And again, they're not talking about what the actual problem is. If I talk to fans, and I get that opportunity quite a bit, believe me, you folks, you let me know what you think. And the issues are, well, first of all, NIL. And I don't think fans are concerned that players are making money. Because why shouldn't they? Everybody else is making money. How about the actual players, the people that you're going to see? How about them sharing in the pie? But how it affects the fans and perhaps the quality of the sport is with the transfer portal. How are they related? Very simple. If you're a player and I'm playing in school A and school B offers me twice as much money, I'm going to go to school B. So the question, and I can't fault the players for doing that. I think for most of you, if the company across the street from yours offered to double your salary, very good chance you would go take that job. So it becomes, what is the answer to this? I think a lot of it is having a contract, an enforceable legal contract for the student athletes that goes beyond 1 year. If I'm signing you up, high school recruit, that freshman year I'm training you, there's a very good chance you're not getting on the field yet. So I'm investing money in you, I'm training you, and then when you're ready to hit the field, you go off to somewhere else. It was dead money that I threw out there to you. If you have multiple year contracts, perhaps it escalates over 2-3 years. And, well, the question could be, well, what if you're locking in that player? And he far exceeds his contract. Can't he leave like coaches do? That's exactly the point, like coaches do. Coaches have multi-year contracts, but they have buyout clauses in those contracts. So when James Franklin was at Penn State, now it was Penn State that fired James Franklin. But if James Franklin wanted to leave in his contract, despite it being however long, 7, 8, 9 years, he had the ability to buy out of that contract if he felt he could go somewhere else and make more money. Why can't we simply do that with players? Now, as I say that, we thought the quarterback from Cincinnati who moved on to Texas Tech, that's how it was reported. A buyout clause, multi-year contract, and now he's refusing to pay it. Guess what? Cincinnati has to sue him to get the money. I hope Cincinnati wins. I really do, so that we have enforceable contracts. Doesn't seem that difficult. Now, does that solve all the problems? Of course not. But does it solve one of the biggest problems that we have who are fans of the college football game and say there are issues? Yeah, I think it does. Now, the next question is, our colleague Andy Shea often likes to say, no matter what the question is, the answer is usually money. Well, that is the case. So those who are worried about sports beyond, football, men's basketball, what about them? Well, I hope we continue to have them. But you know what? There are a lot of businesses out in this world that fail because there's not enough demand for the product. You know what? I am not sure it's the worst thing in the world if schools don't have 30 sports anymore, if they have 25 or 20 sports and not 30-some. I know, that's sacrilegious to say maybe you need to sacrifice some of the sports. But it's not like necessarily it has to be taken away, but maybe the time of having those smaller sports in the Big Ten where a sport that's getting no revenue, but you're paying for plane trips for your team to travel cross-country, for Penn State athletes to travel to Los Angeles to play USC or UCLA. Is that really the best use of a college's financial resources? Do we also need about the 100 or so athletic department administrators that it seems that we have? There are ways to be more efficient that I wish that would be part of the discussion also. My bottom line to all this in the last minute we have here, I don't know if I have a problem with the federal government stepping in and helping out, but please, 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 define what the problem is. Know what the problem is, know what you're targeting, know what it is you're fixing before you fix it, okay? Make sure you know what that problem is. And also, whoever makes those decisions, make sure they are talking to everybody and solving it for everybody. I didn't say make everybody happy. That's impossible. You're always going to have somebody unhappy no matter what solution you create. But the fact is, be aware that everybody who's in these discussions, they have a personal agenda. You know, if you're talking to the Big Ten commissioner, understand he's worried about the Big Ten and the Big Ten only. And it's the same for everybody else who was in that room. All right, that's it for me. That's all the time we have for today. Thank you for tuning in. I really appreciate it. And we'll see you next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.